Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, December 7th, 2016, the 75th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And I want to take this opportunity to thank everybody out there that has proudly served our country, both in the past and currently. My heart goes out to you. My thoughts and prayers are always with you. And I know that's also the case with my co-host, Stan Friedman, reporting live from Atlanta.
Where I share that salute with you, Paul, and give thanks every day to our veterans for their service to our country and for keeping us safe here on the homeland.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Stan, we've got a great show lined up today, which, of course, is the Next Gen Triple Crown of Franchising. Before we dive into that, do you have anything in front of the house?
All I want to do today, Paul, is try to keep it short because we've got three guests, and with three guests, you know, time is a priceless commodity. So rather than tie up the front of the house with anything other than just a reminder that for those of you in the Atlanta area or who will be traveling in the Atlanta area next week, the 13th of December will be the final Southeast Franchise Forum get-together for the year, and it will be in conjunction next Tuesday with the FBN, the Franchise Business Network, with IFA. So if you're an IFA member, whether you belong to the Southeast Franchise Forum or not, please feel free to join us for lunch. Lunch will be sponsored by FRM Solutions next week, and our guest speaker will be the IFA President and CEO, Robert Crisante, giving us a look back on the year in franchising, and more importantly, a look ahead into 2017 with what we can expect in the way of changes and maybe some easement of regulations now that the elections are behind us. And we know which way we're pointed and headed on a go-forward basis. So that's at Maggiano's in Buckhead, 11:30 Tuesday, the 13th, next Tuesday. If you're in or about Atlanta, please log into the Southeast Franchise Forum and sign up and join us for lunch.
Boy, that's a long walk from your office.
Yeah, you know, it's a long walk too, but it's a much appreciated walk back, you know, after all the park.
That's for sure. Well, you know, Stan, great things going on at the International Franchise Association, and I'm sure that Robert Crisante is going to give a very great message to the rank and file. And, of course, this just ahead of the IFA convention in Las Vegas at the end of January. Boy, things are really starting to line up for a busy first quarter of 2017. But, you know, one of the things that I'm most thankful for with the IFA is their initiative with the Next Gen program. And IFA says that we're looking to build the next generation of franchise ambassadors by providing individuals from around the world with networking opportunities, constructive feedback, and a closer look into key components of the franchise process. Next Gen is helping entrepreneurial dreams come true. And, of course, today we have our show showcasing the Next Gen Triple Crown of Franchising, which, of course, is the franchisor, franchisee, and franchise supplier. Unfortunately, I think we have some technical difficulties with one of our guests, franchisee Chris Ragazio, down at Jersey Mike Subs, who has not yet called in. So we're going to move forward with our other two esteemed guests, John Evans, the franchisor, and the founder of Everline Coatings out of the frozen tundra of Calgary, Canada, as well as Sean Goldsmith, a remarkable young gentleman and the founder of Markery. So welcome to Franchise Today. We're really looking forward to today's conversation.
Why don't we
let me just take a moment on the front end of this, Paul, to just talk up a little bit about one of our guests who I actually have known for almost, I guess, 8 years now, Sean Goldsmith, who I guess you were a high school junior when I first met you, Sean. Talk a little bit about how your life morphed from high school into franchising and into your professional career as a supplier?
Sure. So actually, the first person I ever met in franchising was you, Stan. I was involved in DECA. DECA is this organization for high school and college students to get immersed in learning the foundations of business. And my first dive into franchising was winning the Don DeBolt Scholarship. We all know Don, very impactful in franchising. And, Stan actually helped me get to my first convention in San Diego. The year Dina Dwyer Owens was the chairwoman of the IFA. And, you know, this is about, it was about 10 years ago. And I made a lot of contacts there, and I stayed in touch with everybody. And throughout my schooling at Cornell University, I invited many people, including Stan, to speak at Cornell, and I stayed in touch. And over the last year to year and a half, I've actually, for the first time, decided to, you know, become a supplier in the IFA and work with some of these people who've been mentors over the last 10 years. And it's just things come full circle. And, you know, just on another note about full circle, you know, Dina was the chairwoman the year that I went to convention. And about 3 weeks ago, she spoke for her first time at Cornell. So, you know, things do come full circle, but, you know, I have you to thank for putting me in the right direction all those years ago.
So, Paul, before we bring John in to give us a little background about himself, I just want to brag on one last thing about Sean, who has, as I've discovered, only one speed on. And when I first met Sean, he was also an Eagle Scout. And unlike other Eagle Scouts who earn, how many, a dozen badges, Sean, to become an Eagle?
You need 21.
21. So 21 out of 121, and this young guy said 21 out of 121 is okay for others. For me, no, all 121.
Oh, wow.
So he was one of the first Boy Scouts in scouting history to ever do that. I watched him on the Good Morning America and the Today Show and all these other places that he was on TV being showcased. And he brings that same energy with him into franchising, and hopefully we'll learn a little bit more from Sean about that. But let's give John an opportunity first to introduce himself as well. Tell us a little bit about how he came from his school career to the world of franchising as not just a Zor, but a Z first. Isn't that right, John?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I went to university, initially started studying in law, realized, night till 3 a.m. articling wasn't for me, and business was the way to go for my style. So it transitioned into, while I was in school, I was really looking for some extracurricular development, and always had lots of business ideas and energy and how I could apply that. And that's when I came across College Pro Painters, which is a student or an entrepreneur development painting franchise. So we got kind of started with that, and I did our 3 years and was able to rise to the top of the ranks there just over my time. I decided that I need to go out and kind of make my own mark, and went out and essentially right after that developed Everline Coatings and Services as my career kind of going out of university and in college for there. And, you know, just kind of built it as a standalone business and eventually, you know, come to a fork in the road on how you're going to build your business. And the idea of franchising really, really excited me. And whenever it came to, I didn't know where to start. You have a standalone successful business. And then I reached out to College Pro and said, you know what, I have this idea that I think I can scale up in franchising. Where do I go? And they pointed me to the IFA and the Next Gen and franchising contest. And so I just kind of, without really knowing anything about franchising or becoming a franchisor, I threw my application in and became one of the grand prize winners of the first year, and the rest is history. So,
wow, just remarkable. Two young great entrepreneurs with us today, Sean Goldsmith and John Evans. Sean, you and I finally had the opportunity to meet, and I think that was about a year ago, wasn't it, in New York?
Yep, I took one of your classes.
Mm-hmm. Right at the International Franchise Expo in New York. I think that was a year ago this past June, and it was a pleasure to meet you and obviously be connected on social media as well. And, John, you and I met I believe, at the IFA convention 2 years ago when you were there with NextGen, and I believe Jennifer Shell introduced us, and we've had a couple of conversations since then, and, of course, also follow each other in social media as well. So it's really great to know both of you, and I look forward to getting to know you even more after today. So, Sean, let me switch to you and ask you a pointed question. At what point over the last 10 years did you make the firm decision that, you know, franchising is where you wanted to be at? Because I know you founded a company that deals with some of the aspects of lead generation. So what was the tipping point to decide to go towards franchising in as far as your career direction?
Sure. No, that's a pretty good question. One thing that I just want to bring up first is I never had an intention of going into franchising specifically. I just like staying in touch with all the people I met at the convention. It's just there's something different. Like, I came from an investment banking background. That's what I wanted to do. And it's just like the people in the IFA and franchising in general, I'm not just saying this for the sake of it. I mean it. It's different. It's old school. It's like you won't really find it anywhere else. So with that being said, I just like the people in the industry. I know franchising isn't an industry. It's a business model. But in that sector, let's just say. But like John, I actually had similar experience in school. So I did investment banking at Citigroup, and it was an internship, and I gained 25 pounds in 10 weeks because if you work over 11 hours, they give you dinner, and it just wasn't a good experience. I was pulling out my hair. I couldn't wait to leave. And I realized that corporate, specifically, you know, finance, wasn't really for me, even though when you go to college, they tout, if you're in business, consulting, finance, marketing, accounting, those are the staples. I really wanted to do entrepreneurship. So when I was in business school, I went right from undergrad at Cornell to MBA school at Cornell. I was looking more into tech and entrepreneurship. I really wanted to own my own thing. I wanted to be in control of my own destiny, working on something I could build as opposed to on someone else's dream. So I went into tech. You know, I didn't go owning my own business right away or creating my own business to really learn what's cutting edge. You know, I was in San Francisco for 2 years, well, a little over 2 years, and there's a lot of things that are going on there that are not applied to businesses out east in other areas and different sectors. So I created Markery about, I don't know, almost 18 months ago on everything I learned, not just from school, but from my hands-on experience working at Oracle in Silicon Valley, and also as a marketer for a French startup where I was in charge of North American marketing. So, you know, one thing that I realized is it's really hard to go into entrepreneurship right away. But once you have some backing and you have some experience, you can do it. But with Markery, I first started working with tech companies and helping them with their sales and marketing automation. But then I realized why, you know, my and the people at Markery, why are we helping people that are already, you know, really knowledgeable in tech? Let's go to industries where, you know, they haven't yet been fully immersed in tech. So we focused on schools. So we treat admissions like a sales process. So, you know, is someone really, you know, wanting to go to Cornell, or are they just shopping around and they applied to 20 schools? We could tell that, and, you know, treating a student as a potential customer. And then with franchise sales, it's the same thing, you know, vetting people out. So if you have hundreds of leads in your pipeline, you actually know who the right people to call are and different marketing, automation, sales flows. So it's taking all the things that, you know, high-tech industries are using and applying it to education and franchise sales. But just, you know, to put a bow on this, you know, I think a lot of students, and I actually have a second company where we have a partnership with eCornell, and we're creating different types of curriculum with franchise experts you know, professors at Cornell. And the point really is, it's like when you go to school, they tell you to do corporate, or they say do entrepreneurship, but you don't have capital, you're usually in debt, you lack experience. And I think franchising really is a third path of business ownership that a lot of students don't know about. You never really hear about franchising in schools. And it's unfortunate. So that's why I think NextGen and really, you know, John on the line is really a good example of allowing young people to own their future by being business owners. And franchising is really a compromise or middle ground between, you know, straight corporate and entrepreneurship.
So, John, your path is a little bit different. I love in your bio, you said you really had to make a decision between becoming the highway marking king of Western Canada and generating more sales from existing customers or franchising. So what was the actual tipping point where you said, franchising is really the way I need to go?
I think I'm kind of a guy that looks at the big picture here for humanity. I'm a little bit of a Star Trek nerd in that regard. And, I, you know, I was just kind of, how can I personally do the most good, you know, in my time on Earth here? And, you know, Everline was always, to me, just been described as a vehicle for personal and professional growth for absolutely everybody involved, from management down to our line painters, even to our clients, of learning something new with us and that type of thing. And franchising to me sounded like an excellent model to apply that. It gave me an opportunity to, you know what, we've had a lot of success, a lot of laughs, a lot of smiles, and no, don't get me wrong, blood, sweat, and tears, and all that kind of stuff. And it, to me, it's just really a force for good. And then so whenever you go into have a model that's provided so much good things for myself personally and our staff here, it's something that, you know what, I simply just wanted to share and just more or less spread the word on that. And franchising was, to me, or my most the way that I was most interested in going after there. So it was just more or less, it's more or less a people play here. And you know what, in order, if we have a successful business and you can improve you know, people's livelihoods, and especially with our angle towards the millennial generation in which we are recruiting our franchisees, you know what, you actually have a system here that can really do a lot of great things for the individuals and going with and continuing that vehicle for personal and professional growth.
I'm going to ask Sean a little bit more about the eCornell and the Cornell connection, but I've got to ask you a question first, John. And that question is, you know, I pull up to a lot of parking lots in my 2009 Honda Accord, where my doors get banged around because those lines get painted closer than the seats on a Delta jet. Whose decision is it to do that to me and to others like me? Is that you, the guys who do the painting, or is it the people who own the property?
It's you know, we always advise against the ever shrinking parking stalls, but no, it is the requirement for the people, the engineers and the architects developing the plans, and they want their parking stall count to look very high to whoever they're developing it for. So unfortunately, it's just getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
my guess would have been that it was somebody in the public sector, because nobody with business sense would be doing that to me or others who have to get into those parking lots. But what do I know?
Dan, look at it from my perspective, being 80 pounds heavier than you. So,
Sorry about that, Paul. So, Sean, I want to come back to the Cornell connection. You know, I think it was probably in 2009 or thereabout that you had me come to Cornell and talk, and it was shortly after the recession, and I know that I made some comments about how most anybody in that room that I was speaking to was probably not there as a Cornell student with their parents funding their education to move on at thinking about the world of entrepreneurship. They didn't come to Cornell to become a Subway store owner or to be a franchisee painting lines, at least not in the minds of their parents. But that was then, and I look forward to what's happened, how this next gen movement has taken hold, and how you've brought franchising and entrepreneurship back to Cornell as something with a proactive stance, not just happenstance. It's not just because the economy sucked the wind out of jobs and graduating students couldn't find work, so they had to think about business. Now it's actually proactive, isn't it? And we're creating a bit of a movement and a drumbeat toward another generation of business ownership. Talk a little bit about the influence that you've had and how Cornell has helped embrace that and made it possible.
Sure. So actually, Joe Bordeaux, you know, former president of Alpac, he was one of the speakers at Cornell, and he said it real simply. He said franchising is like starting at the 30-yard line in football. So, with Professor Ben Daniel's class at the MBA school, in the past, people are creating business plans to create new businesses from scratch. And while that's admirable, there's a very high failure rate. I think it's over 90% for brand new businesses that fail in the first 3 years. And I don't have the specific statistics for franchising, but I think after the first 3 years, I think the failure rate is somewhere under 15%. So you have like between a 6 to 8 times more likely chance of succeeding in a franchise as a franchisee than building something from scratch. And I understand what you're saying, like people come to university, they're usually focused on investment banking or consulting and things like that, but there's limited seats and it's highly competitive. And also, even if you do get those jobs, people are pretty upset. They don't like being boxed in. Now's the time to take risks, right? If you have $200,000 to $300,000 in debt, you're laced with that. How are you going to pay it off but still pursue your dreams? So at Cornell, we're creating curriculum, for all different parts of the franchisor and franchisee life cycle, from learning about what you need to understand when looking for a franchise, being onboarded, to things like that. But our real goal is eventually to turn it loose on students, to really give them a third path, somewhere between corporate and, pure entrepreneurship. And it's almost like going into politics, not current politics, but if you think of ancient politics, Athens used to be one of it used to be the United States of America, 2,500 years ago. And one of the reasons it failed was it was a pure democracy. You need to have checks and balances. And it's kind of like pure entrepreneurship. When you're trying to build a business from scratch, it's a very high failure rate. You need to have some grounding. You need some checks and balances. And that's what franchising affords. It allows corporate backing, right? If you're going to create a Subway store and you are going to be a new franchisee, you're linked to a brand that succeeds. You have a bunch of franchisees you can reach out to and mentor you, especially if you're a young student with no experience or limited experience. But yet, the people you hire are your employees. You know, the local marketing you do is your local marketing. If you want to work with a charity locally, that's your decision. So I think it's becoming more and more popular, and especially with trade schools, right? If you're going to go in BOCES to learn about auto mechanics, why work at someone's auto mechanic shop? Why not own a Meineke, right? Or own like a Grease Monkey? So I think that's where things are shifted towards.
You know, Paul, when I first met Sean, I knew that he was going to be successful in franchising. I didn't know if he'd wind up on the Zorz or supplier side, but I've shared this with you, I think, in prior conversations that we've had with reference to Sean, that he at a young age has learned how to do something that it's taken Jerry Darnell a lifetime to do, which is build a Rolodex, as we used to call it. Sean is the consummate networker. I introduced him to the then mayor of Cincinnati, Mark Mallory, at his first IFA convention when Sean was there. Mark was there. Sean and Mark are still friends. You know, Sean met Doc Cohn that first year, and I go to events that Doc's at and see Doc. Sean goes to those events and stays at Doc's house. So, you know, whether you're coming into our business from any of the three verticals that people enter it as a Zor, as a Z, or a supplier, I think we all who succeed in franchising understand and know that the relationship side of the business is what really drives success. And Sean, at a tender, mid-20s age, has that kind of nailed. John, I want to ask you, from north of our border, you have the good fortune of involvement in franchising, not just with IFA, but with the CFA as well. So what about some perspective on what it is to be a next-gen entrepreneur from the Canadian side of the border, and does the CFA embrace next-gen the way we do at IFA?
Oh, absolutely. The CFA has been a great resource You know, it's funny. I met the CEO of the CFA on the dance floor at the pool party up next gen there. So that was kind of a funny happenstance there. But no, as soon as she heard, you know, that that Canada's been making some great waves, and you know, we've had myself as a grand prize winner, as well as last year, Carmelo Spraynet, he was also a Canadian. You know, you have a lot of really cool things happening in Canada in the franchising world, and the CFA has seemed to really, really embrace it. They provided me a lot, like, you know, the next gen contest has, with a lot of great resources and networking opportunities, and connected to me to some of the top franchisors here in Canada for a lot of mentorship and a lot of just calls of, you know, what do I do now, kind of thing. So yeah, that's it's been a fantastic experience with the CFA.
Awesome. Hey, this is Franchise Today, everybody. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto. And we're speaking today with two out of three of franchising's youngest and brightest shining stars of the future, representing the trifecta of franchising on the franchisor, franchisee, and supplier side. On the Zor side, John Evans is the founder of Everline Coatings and Services. From the franchisee side, with some technical difficulties getting in today, we hope to get him back for a future appearance, will be Chris Rigasio, Jersey Mike's multi-unit operator, and representing the supplier side, Markery founder and CEO Sean Goldsmith, providing IFA members with franchise strategies that sell. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, where their team of professionals has been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years with healthy, sustainable growth, the kind of growth that comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides their clients with coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach that fosters more effective solutions for their corporate teams as well as their franchisees. The Franchise Foundry is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and is skilled and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment and development as well. The Franchise Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and can provide the guidance needed to navigate those waters. You can learn more about Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. FRM is the only franchise-centric CRM that enables you to manage and store text messages as well as emails. FRM also enables simple collaborative communications between you and your prospective and existing franchisees. Make today the day you give FRM a look and start 2017 assured that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including texts sent and received by anyone on your team, are being permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. FRM also provides state-of-the-art candidate experience for your prospective franchisees, never available in virtual brochures. And one last thing, unlike others, with FRM, your cloud-based software solution is upgraded twice a year at no additional cost, so you're always operating on the latest and greatest version of their software. Give them a look. FRM solutions, easily accessed from your Outlook inbox or the cloud. No excuses, just solutions. You'll find them on the web at frmsolutions.com.
Thanks, Stan. You know, it's interesting. I've had a passion of working with young entrepreneurs for quite a while. I'm very passionate about everything that is said about millennials. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding that's out there about millennials, and specifically about millennials and business ownership. And I think that the two gentlemen we have on the line today really epitomize some of the things that I've been saying about millennials and entrepreneurship, which is, you know, kind of going at things a little bit differently, maybe a little bit what wouldn't appear non-traditional. And, of course, a lot of people that might have negative connotations about millennials, and specifically with millennials in business ownership, might feel, because the non-traditional might not be the right way to go about it, almost bucking the trend, and I totally disagree. So the question that I would ask, John, and I'll start with you, you're in an industry segment that's been around for a long, long time. I'm sure you run up against, you know, companies that have a long history doing what you do. What is it about your perspective as a young entrepreneur that makes you stand out to the point that not only have a successful business, but receiving accolades and awards one right after the other, and yet mm-hmm. you're a young entrepreneur? What kind of perspective are you bringing to the table that maybe is somewhat against the grain of what might be previously looked at as non-traditional?
I think one of the major strengths of millennials, you know, with me being one of them, is really just as a generation, we tend to be fairly resourceful and adaptable to new technologies coming forward. And this industry alone hasn't quite seen much innovation or a lot of energy put forth to it. And, you know, like, how do we change the game? Let's just we are what I like to call an industry disruptor per se, and it seems to work. One major thing has been really with, like, throwing a lot of excellent business fundamentals at the industry and doing that with a millennial twist to it. Now, with the negative connotations to millennials, you know, it's really just a factor of, like, you know what, there's the brand new, class of young, talented people coming into the workforce that were raised a bit differently than yourself, and, you know, and the older generation. Now, that requires different levels of management, different levels of motivation, down to the very different types of language that you use, and even how you manage and motivate your crews and everything like that. Now, I feel that we found a fairly good, you know, with us being millennials and being able to relate, you know, fairly good just method in order to attract, retain, and empower the millennial generations within Everline. And with that, you get a total buy-in across the board from all of the staff, and that is absolutely noticeable through our clients, through our suppliers. Everybody who comes in contact with us, there's a real positive energy because you have that millennial power behind it.
You know, it's, I don't think it's any a coincidence. You mentioned earlier about Carmelo Marsala, the next gen champion, or one of the next gen champions from this past year, and a previous guest on Franchise Today, and I asked him a similar question, and the response was very much along the same lines as you just given. So I definitely hear you, Sean. Kind of a similar question, although you appear to have come a little bit more from the traditional, obviously esteemed Ivy League school, which, by the way, my brother also graduated from way back when, as John said, the older generation, Stan. I guess we're the older generation. but, you know, you also, Sean, you know, came in through that the old traditional, even towards, you know, investment banking. You hear so much of, you know, Ivy League, get your Ivy League degree, get your MBA from an Ivy League school, go on to Wall Street, and yet you took a slightly different course and in an industry segment that, oh, my God, there's been, you know, so many people out there, and I know there's a lot of discussion about, you know, the old way of lead generation, which, you know, we've been fighting now for the last, I don't know how many years, but you've got a different perspective, so I would like to hear your insight on a similar question I asked John.
Yeah, so, you know, to give you an example of, you know, millennials thinking. So, you know, when I was at Citigroup and I was really geared to being an investment banker, I had a lot of creativity. And I was told, you know, by the higher-ups, they said, look, you're not here to be creative. You're here to be to do as you're told. And they said, look, entrepreneurship is dead here. That's not what a millennial wants to hear. You know,
right.
You know, with millennials, what you're doing or what they don't care about what or how, they care about why they're doing it. If you think of successful companies like Apple, for example, or Facebook, you know, that are cutting edge, you know, there's a why to what they do. You know, things that are companies that are laggard, like HP, you know, they've had all these issues because I don't know why they do it. Like, it's not clear what their motivation is. So with millennials, you know, I guess where, you know, they run up against baby boomers is their curiosity, or maybe they're, you know, the youngest person in the room might question the CEO. It's not so much that they're being disrespectful. I think that's a misconception. I think it's that millennials just want to find the best way to do it. So I think to be successful, especially in tech, because a lot of what we do at Marguerite and also my other entity, GS Prep, that has a partnership with eCornell, is that we check ego at the door. And what I mean by that is if someone has a lesser degree or lesser experience, it doesn't matter. If they have the better idea, that's what we run with. It doesn't matter who originates it. What matters is the results, right? So as long as it's ethical and as long as it's the most profitable and makes the most sense, who cares how it was originated? Who cares if it's brand new? One of the things that, you know, millennials hate to hear is, you know, the reason we do this is because we've always done it that way. You know, what that sounds like is an opportunity ripe for innovation, right? If someone says we've always done it this way, the millennial's like, great, let's look for ways to improve it and optimize it. And where, you know, some of the older generations might see that as being disrespectful. So I think with millennials and new businesses, you know, people like Carmelo, people like Andy, who had Surfer Price 1 year before, you know, like they're willing to change, you know, they're willing to adapt. And I don't really think they care that they're in charge of their companies. I just think they take more pride in, like, look how many, you know, stores we've opened in the last year or two. That's what matters to them. They don't care how they've done it as long as, you know, they're successful. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
I love what you said. It's not, you know, water how, it's why. And I had read a quote from Jamie Kasup from Google Global Education Evangelist on career counseling advice in the new economy. And the quote was, don't ask kids what they want to be when they grow up or what problems do they want to solve. This changes the conversation from who do I want to work for to what do I need to learn to be able to do that. And, Stan, I think that's a powerful quote. And also, believe it or not, I have Chris Ragasio joining the show. Chris, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hey, guys. My apologies. I'm a little late.
Not a problem.
Glad you made it, Chris. Glad you made it.
Technological issues happen here and then, so we appreciate you being here. Stan?
Yeah, I was going to throw a question out to probably John first and then ask Sean to answer the same question. Let's just turn the paradigm upside down for a moment because we've been talking a lot about your points of view as millennials. What about the people with whom you work, and what about the people that you need to direct? So in your case, John, as a franchisor, you've got a team of infrastructure people on your team that I'm curious as to whether they are all millennial as well, or are you having to hire, manage, and maintain relationships with people that might be old enough to be your parents, and yet you're their boss? And what does that look like, and how does it work? And it's a two-part question for you, John. Because the other part of that question is your recruits, your franchisee recruits might be in the same scenario. They may double or triple your age, you know. How does that work? And is that a dynamic that is also somewhat disruptive but in a different kind of way? How do you manage through that? And then Sean will ask you similar.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. We are majority millennials here. However, we've brought in, some staff members where it's been required for the experience and things like that, that are, you know, one or two or three generations older than myself. So with that, though, it kind of goes into the spirit of what, with Everline and just kind of the millennial kind of mindset is keeping an open mind and be open to learning. And you know what, while that's big for the millennials, which when they come in, they are relatively inexperienced, but they're bringing in the benefits of that brand new energy. You also have the experienced people coming in, adapting to that, and everybody learning to work together with that. Now, naturally, there's always a bit of a learning curve with that. However, just keeping the communication consistent and the teachings on that consistent and how that's going to work out has been very, very successful with us there. So, and then also with franchisees, absolutely. That's going to be a situation where, you know what, it's, I look at it as a very, I look at it as person to person, and what we're doing, you know, is we're all just trying to, you know, plug away and, you know, make our difference in the world that we need to do. And, you know, communication amongst one another is very, very important. And just setting the boundaries right off the bat, setting the expectations and understanding this is how I work. I understand how you work. How are we going to work together on this?
Now, Sean, in your world, I'm going to suppose that because so much of what you do is surrounded by technology, that people that are maybe my age or someplace between my age and yours are less prone to understand. So they're looking to you for the kind of understanding and guidance about things you've grown up doing that are somewhat foreign to them. And maybe that offsets it a little bit, but do you run into any challenges where the difference generationally between you and the client paying you causes any kinds of barriers to communication or issues that are difficult to work through?
Definitely, and I think one of the ways that I personally and, you know, the people at my company have been able to handle that is, you know, giving value right off the bat and building rapport right away. And there's nowhere that that's more necessary than franchising. It's a very close-knit community, as you know. So, you know, when I first meet people, I try to, you know, deliver value, you know, not as clients. I'm not charging, you know. I'm helping for the sake of helping, and I'm not looking for anything in return. And it usually pays itself back in dividends. And, you know, for people, you know, that are older generation might not get everything so that's so technical, when, you know, they become a client or they're, you know, let's say the franchisor becomes a client, they're willing to give you a little bit more trust and say, look, I don't completely understand it, you know, explain it to me or I'll let you run with it. Where, you know, a lot of, you know, younger people like us that try to get into franchising, let's say the education industry, you know, they just come in guns blazing and they say what's on their mind without understanding the client first. So I think to answer this, you first got to build rapport with the client or, you know, in this case, you know, people that might be a little older because they have trust in you and they value you as a person. And then when things are a little foreign to them, they're going to be more willing to listen to you and to open their mindset a little bit. And then I think the second thing is, one thing, you know, I kind of have like a little bit of an old soul, even though I'm a millennial. The importance of respect and just being grateful to people. So, you know, two people we mentioned, so Dina Duaro and Doc Cohn, we're both chairmen or chair people of the IFA, right? But both of them make sure to always write thank you notes. I know it sounds like a small thing, but that's very important to them, and that's part of their value system. So if you know that's important to them, you know, you should write thank you notes back. But that also taught me, you know, that generation or those, you know, that those, you know, different generations, you know, that's important to them. Where people, you know, that are millennials think a text suffices, you know, saying thanks or like TY on your text. It's not the same thing, you know. So understanding the value systems and then mirroring it because, you know, you have to understand where people are comfortable and you want to make them feel as comfortable as possible. So for millennials, especially when you're a supplier or a franchisor trying to sell new stores to these, you need to adapt a little bit to make those potential buyers comfortable.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean, for sharing that perspective with the audience. And now joining us from New Jersey, Chris Ragasio, getting to us a little bit late. And Chris, I got to tell you, man, I don't know what I was thinking about when we invited a multi-unit Jersey Mike's franchisee to join us at lunchtime. What were we thinking about?
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys.
But really happy that you're able to make it. And I'm going to ask you just to catch up with us and do the same thing that we asked of John and Sean at the outset of the program. And that's just give us a snapshot of how a graduate from West Virginia University, in your case, found his way from his formal education to the sandwich line at Jersey Mike's and in the sandwich and franchising business. Walk us through what motivated that and how it happened.
Yeah, so when I graduated in 2011, I guess a snapshot of it would be, you know, I was out in West Virginia for 4 years. And when I was out there, we just couldn't get a good sandwich. You know, I'm from Bricktown, which is the next town over from Point Pleasant. So I grew up my whole life eating Jersey Mike's. Like, literally from the day I could walk, I was probably eating those sandwiches. So when I went away to school, you know, it was a kind of a culture shock. I couldn't find a Jersey Mike's sub. And that really got the idea going in my head. Like, we can make a lot of money out here if we did it. So by the time I graduated, being a kid from New Jersey, you know, I really did not see myself staying in West Virginia, so I came back. When I came back, I still had the idea in my head, and, you know, young college graduate, thought I knew it all. At the time, I walked into the franchise office, and I was just kind of like, hey, I want a store. Was denied right away. So at that point, I kind of just started from the bottom, really. I got a job working in a local store for, like, minimum wage, $8.50 an hour, whatever it was back then, and kept plugging away for a year, year and a half, just kind of working towards my goal. And eventually, after going into the office every few months saying, I'm ready, and then kept telling me I'm not ready, eventually I got my way. You know, I proved myself, so just kind of stuck with it and, you know, just worked my way up from just hourly employee up to owning a single unit. And then from there, I kind of branched off and did some other things. And now we're back. Fast forward 5 years later, we're about to open our seventh store. So
awesome.
Wow.
So taking no from Brian Summers is not something that you took lying down. Is that what you're telling us?
No, it was very tough. I kept
Paul,
head to head with him. We did not like each other for, I would say, the first year. I didn't really understand back then, you know, but it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Like, you know, now looking back on it, if I didn't choose the route that I, you know, Brian put me on, the tough route to, you know, really learning the business and really just being what I call in the trenches, like just behind that line and just getting smoked all day long. You know, I don't know if I would be as successful as I am today. So definitely hats off to him for putting me through that.
And definitely hats off to the Jersey Mike system for not just accepting a check and putting you on the path to what might have been failure. I think that lends towards what Sean was saying, you know, and John's been saying about, you know, value systems. You know, too many emerging franchisors, you know, obviously would take that check and figure it out. And I'm glad to hear that it went in a different direction. Yeah, I imagine it would be difficult to accept a no from Brian Summers as well as the rest of the Jersey Mike team. I couldn't imagine. I say hats off to you for, I mean, owning, you know, not one, not two, but, you know, now going on your seventh location. And that's truly an entrepreneurial task. Yeah, Stan, what I'd like to do is, as we're closing in, I think we got about 10 minutes left towards the top of the hour, I'd like to ask each of our guests one or two bits of key advice that they would give to other millennials about entrepreneurship and certainly about franchising. So, Sean, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So, you know, if there's one thing I could say to millennials, if there are any millennials listening, is now is the time, you know, when you're graduating college or when you're in school to experiment. You know, most likely you're not married, you don't have kids, you might have college debt, but you're always going to have college debt. It's not going to go away. So now is the time to be risky, and it's almost silly not to take the risk now, because when you get older, it gets more difficult to take those risks. So if you are entrepreneurial, and I have a lot of friends that call me up every week and they say how they hate their job, now is the time to take a chance. Once you have a few years, or, you know, 2 or 3 years of experience, especially where you've learned on someone else's dollar, right? Because that's really what jobs are. Think about it. People are paying you to learn, you know, with their money, especially if you run a budget, to take a chance. And if you fail, then you could always go back to corporate. There's nothing wrong with that. But now is really the time to take a chance. And you don't have to do it as a franchisor. You know, that's the mistake. Everyone wants to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, you know, and create a big tech company. But you know, if not that, they want to be, you know, like Andy, right, with Surf and Fry, where he's, like, I think over 100 locations. That's great. But that's not for everyone. You just want to have some autonomy. There's nothing wrong. And it's actually, I think, a really good idea to be a franchisee and then, you know, build it up where you could have multiple franchise units, right? So that's my take on it.
Excellent. How about you, John?
I would say it's very, very important to really just, you know, do a lot of soul searching, you know, really find out what values you connect with and really just look out into, you know, what's out there in terms of the, you know, whether or not you do want to be a franchisee or franchisor, you know, if there are businesses out there that really more or less, you know, have a value system that really ideally connect with your own, because it's really just very, very important to just have your heart, mind, and soul into the into whatever you're doing. And you know, as we said before, it's, you know, and quoting Ms. Frizzle on that, take chances, make mistakes, get messy. This is the time to do it. This is the time to get rolling with it. And you know what, if sometimes, you know, just going out, trying it out, figuring it out, that's all part of the journey, that there is no that there's no absolute right path for everybody, and that failure is an absolute normal part of it, and that's where the growth is.
And Chris, your thoughts?
I think, you know, after your due diligence phase and, you know, you really find what you are working towards and you get into the field, I think one of the most important things is relationships and creating mentors. You know, it's a good thing to identify successful people in your field, people that are doing really good at, you know, franchising or anything, and creating those relationships and building mentors that can, you know, pass down their success to you, and then you can do the same to pass it down to, you know, your managers or your marketers or whoever is below you or working for you as well. I think that's, you know, really important and has played a key part in what I do here.
If we could, guys, as we wrap up, I'm having an epiphany, Paul, as to maybe a follow-up to this program where we have a panel of NextGen's back to talk not just about their points of view, but maybe impart some advice for elder statesmen in franchising and helping them have insights as to how to manage millennials coming into their world, whether as franchisees and or employees, and put a whole different, we could do another full hour on the insights of these young people as pertains to managing through the relationships with the guys like us that have been here for a while. I think at this point, guys, I'm going to ask you very quickly to just let the audience know how they could find you if they'd like to follow up and pursue any of these topics of conversation further. Chris, why don't we start with you?
I guess email address would be the easiest way.
Sure.
It'd be Chris, C-H-R-I-S, Rigasio, R-I-G-A-S-S-I-O, @gmail.com.
Appreciate that. And John, those who might want to learn about your opportunity and more about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to get hold of me is directly through email. It's quite simple. It's John, J-O-H-N, @everlinecoatings.com.
And Sean, I'm going to ask you to do the same, but I'll tell anybody that wants to know about you, they should actually call me. But go ahead,
well,
Sean. Let it rip anyway.
That is true. Again, my name is Sean Goldsmith. My email is Sean, S-H-A-W-N, @markarie.com. And you can find us at markarie.com.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you all for sharing with our audience and for agreeing to be a part of this panel today. And I hope that you three will stay in touch with one another and continue to draw from each other's experience and knowledge and share those golden nuggets with each other and the world as you continue to embark on the greatest career in franchising. Thank you for joining us today on Franchise Today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you,
Paul.
Well, Stan, we've got another great show on the books, and of course, I want to remind everybody that's out there that all segments of Franchise Today are available on blogtalk.com blogtalkradio.com/franchisetoday. But easier is to go to iTunes under Franchise Today, and 7 years worth of shows are available. And Stan, when we come back from, you know, Christmas vacation break, the holiday break, we'll be celebrating the 8th year on the air for Franchise Today. But ahead of that, you have a special guest lined up for us next week on our last show of 2016. Tell us about it.
Paul, why don't you tell the audience who's here next week for our last show of 2016?
Okay. It's Mary Jo Larson, the publisher of Franchise Times magazine, along with other entities that are within that group, conferences, some of the best conferences in all of franchising. And I think it'd be good, you know. What was it?
Well, I was going to say we only had 5 minutes. I couldn't put the introduction of Mary Jo into any less than 15 or 20. But yeah, I'm excited that Mary Jo is going to join us. And I was looking too, Paul, at just a couple of quick notes that I wanted to share before we went out of here today. And that is that we've got a couple of major events coming right out of the gate into the new year with Franchise Expo South, January 12th through 14th, and then of course the IFA convention follows that, the 28th and 9th of January. And I wanted to, just at the end of the program today, pay respects in advance to this year's award winners at the IFA convention, three of whom I'm extremely proud of, because these are people I've known for years. Russ Frith receiving the IFA Hall of Fame Award, former CEO of Lawn Doctor. Our good friend, founder and CEO of Sports Clips, Gordon Logan. The Bonnie Levine Award winner this year will be Rhoda Olson. And by the way, Gordon's award is Entrepreneur of the Year. And then the Ronald E. Harrison Diversity Award, one that's near and dear to my heart, goes to Ferenc Fehér, CEO of Fehér & Fehér. So these are the four award winners at the 2017 IFA convention. We can look forward to that in February, and absolutely looking forward to Mary Jo Larson, who's just got so much to share with us next week here on Franchise Today.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great show to end the year. I think it'll be kind of a recap from her perspective, as well as I'd be interested to gain some of her insight and perspective on the year ahead. I think that's really going to be something that a lot of people are going to be looking forward to. And before we end the show, I do want to say a special word about the passing of Roger Murphy this week, the founder of Murphy Business and Financial Services. It certainly took the world by surprise. I met Roger 4 years ago, and although I certainly didn't know him well, I was intrigued by his perspective of business brokerage and how the same principles could apply to franchise brokerage. We actually entertained doing some things together that unfortunately never materialized, but it certainly were those conversations that led me down the road to more opportunities in franchise brokerage, and of course, ultimately, recent appointment as president of the Franchise Brokers Association. So my heart, my prayers go out to Roger's family. He was a great man himself, and his words certainly will not be forgotten. Rest in peace, Roger. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing called franchising. And Franchise Today is